And I would like to welcome someone who tries to sneak in without being noticed. He is sitting there towards the window, our dear Stephen. And it is thanks to Stephen that I'm here. We knew each other from before, and Stephen and Leela came to Switzerland at the end of October, I think it was, and that's why I'm here. So I'm really happy that, yes, the founder of this place, for those who don't know him, that the founder of this place gives us the honor to share the meditation with us, the practice, and I'm obviously sitting in the place where he would usually sit. I guess so. So I'm very, very honored, and want just to pay my respect to my elders. Yeah, those people who have, you know, we have been talking about the generations that are always taking care all over the world that the Dharma continues to reach always new people, and in this way continuing through the ages. And Stephen is taking care of that. Stephen is taking care, like he says so beautifully, he steps aside, but he doesn't step out. You know, it's like he's there and sees that things are developing well. So all my gratitude also for this. You made a beautiful place here. And this whole atmosphere, this open atmosphere is very inviting. And since we are sitting here with a little bit of informal talk, you know that I came here really with the wish to learn from you, and not to take sides, but to share deep Dharma with you. And it has been my prayer also to meet Palestinians. So that seems to be happening now. That is possible. Probably on Sunday I will meet with some of the Palestinian people involved in the mindfulness and Dharma movement. We are trying to set up the situation, and I'm very touched about that, because we are all one. We are like, everyone is searching for happiness. Everyone is so desperate for peace, actually, and I cannot help with that, but I can be someone, you know, coming from the outside and showing that nobody is forgotten. And while the world gets into splits about pro, contra, you know, for and against and so on, we are more subtle. We try to touch the Buddha nature in everybody, and actually it's on that level, on the deepest level of relaxed being together, that is where we can actually share and encounter each other. And we have so much to share. Just to start with the most obvious, we have a beautiful planet to share, right? So we have that. We have these resources to share, which make it possible for this precious human life. You know, it's amazing. We have to share so much. And we have love to share if we go on, you know. We have friendship to share. And as you know, then the more generosity there is, the more friendship there is, the more it grows. It never gets less. It just grows. And when I was young, I thought that I wasn't so sure how many people one can love. I wasn't so sure. You know, I came out of my 7 years of retreat, and my teacher asked me to take care of the first two retreat groups for the next 3 years and 3 months. And wow, I had to open my heart for these 30 men. I was taking care of men, and the women were taken care of by women. And wow, I opened my heart and shared my love with them. And then after 3.5 years, I was asked to take care of 4 retreat groups of the same size. And then I kind of needed to double the space in my heart, so to speak, to take in the very personal life and practice of more people. And it wasn't at that time, you know, remember I told you I was 34 and then 37 when the next step happened. And I discovered that with the same intensity as I was loving my partner before, and now being a monk, being with my own retreat group, then I could be with the first 2 to guide. Then they would continue, and 2 more were added. So wow. And then this process never stopped. And this so-called heart, this heart mind, is actually able to love without limits. And I wasn't sure about that before. I really wasn't sure. And I was already a practitioner for many years with intensive practice, but life had to show that. I needed to learn from life. And then now I know that just like the mind is this you know, this unhindered play of phenomena, like a mirror, you know, we were talking about that, this fluidity, this unhindered manifestation, that this is not only, you know, for like abstract thinking and, you know, thoughts and sensations can arise, but as many movements of love can arise without any movement depleting the mind, but actually always making it more ready for the next movement of love to arise. So actually, there is always the possibility to open a little more. Just let's not get stuck on the previous movement. It's always happening, and sometimes it's closing again. Fear comes back. Yes. And then again it can open. So, wow, we can breathe with this kind of openness, with this love. And there has been a very loving contact with you in the last days. Yeah, and you responded so incredibly to each other and to the Dharma and so on. So we are going much further in sharing the Dharma, the depths of the teaching, than I originally thought would be possible. So I'm actually finding that that we can go even further. So further means becoming more subtle. You know, let's take refuge now, and then I will talk more, because now it seems that the teaching starts, right? Namo Buddha, Namo Dharma, Namo Sangha. Namo Buddha, Namo Dharma, Namo Sangha. Namo Buddha, Namo Dharma, Namo Sangha. And do you remember this morning how I quickly translated it into other words? Namo Buddha nature. Namo truth which liberates. Namo brothers and sisters all over the world. Yes? You can remember that, you know, improvised meaning of Buddha Dhamma Sangha. So in the past days, we have established the ground. We have established the attitude, the motivation. We have shared about the 4 immeasurables and how they become the bodhicitta, that they are really limitless. They are really limitless in time and space and quantity. And we have established this this warmth of the heart with ourselves, seeing that actually every thought, every movement is an expression of compassion. We have looked into that. And I asked you before going into the pause, into the exercises or whatever you were doing, to keep a little eye on that, to see how actually every way, the way you stretch, the way you move, where you put your mat and so on, everything is an expression of that care. And then as you were taking your breakfast and sharing the room, I mean the place in the dining room and then outside, there's always this interaction with the surrounding. So there is a natural care, a natural respect. And we know that the place which is taken by someone else, we cannot take. We sit somewhere else, we respect the aunts, and so on. Yeah, so this is like we are on this ground, and we have started to work a little bit with this receptive side of ourselves, this resonance, which is a sensitivity of feeling, of being sensitive to what is there in us and around, you know, without even making a clear distinction between inside, outside. It's just in our awareness of the situation, there is a sensitivity for how it is. And then there is an active side of that, which is the response. It is the resonance which then gives out an interaction, a thought, an image, a gesture, and so on. So there is this natural sharing, receiving, kind of not only information, it's more, you know, we have subtle antenna where we feel, and the feeling, you cannot say it is only a receptive form. Actually, when you start feeling someone or a situation, the interaction already begins. When you feel a person, the person feels felt, and already the interaction is there. So you don't need to wait so much for the second step, which will come when you start talking, or when you move together, or when you look into each other's eyes and so on. Then there is more interaction. But the interaction with the environment is already there when we allow for that resonance to happen. We can be sure of that. Why do I say this? Because you can see it with the animals. When you approach an animal that is more or less relaxed, not in a fearful state, then that animal feels whether you are in resonance and how much you are in it. And it creates a different atmosphere. It will decide for itself. It doesn't mean that it has to come towards you. No, no, no. It feels safe. It feels okay. Maybe there is the purring of the cat as you pass by. You know, it's like, huh, you know, there's already this resonance. And don't think that the birds don't notice you. When you sit out there under the tree meditating, the birds notice very well that you are sitting under the tree. And they chirp a little bit differently. They purr a little bit differently. You know, the pigeons, the purring of the pigeons. Yeah, it's like, and so on. And some of them, they start actually singing with us, for us, interacting. And it's quite amazing when you enter that resonance, how the universe actually resonates with us. So we are in this, I repeat myself, we are in this interbeing very much. Now in this interbeing, you know, in this interdependence, then actually because of underlying fears and hopes and so on, then at times we have what we call emotions, right? The difficult ones, the afflictive emotions, they are called kleshas in the, yeah? Kilesha in Pali, klesha in Sanskrit. They are actually what stops us from being our natural self. It's that which is like a little handicap. But basically, they are movements of compassion. Okay? Emotions, they are actually the expression of wanting to be happy. When I get angry, it's because I feel this will not allow me to be happy. I have to destroy it, drive it out of my life, I have to change it. And there is a positive side to that anger, which is wanting to change something that doesn't seem to be so helpful for happiness. And you can be angry for something that is not even your business. You're angry about something that infringes on the happiness of others. And you become angry for that because it doesn't allow these people to be happy or that animal to be happy. You know, it's like it's not only self-concern. Of course, we say sometimes, and it's a little bit short-sighted, we say then, often we hear this in the Dharma, that we identify with the other person, that this is another form of ego clinging when we get angry for another person. You know, but actually, behind that identification with the other person or that animal which is, for example, mistreated, then there is also compassion. There's also this love. We are in resonance with what we think this other being is experiencing. We are in a resonance with that, and we just don't know better how to react to that injustice and that what we observe and that relation. We don't know better than to react with a very strong, angry reaction, which wants to drive out that which seems to be so difficult to bear. So, in my understanding of the Dharma in those last years, then I have found it to be helpful that wherever we talk about the clinging to a seeming self, ego-centered attitudes, that we see the part of it which is compassion. It seems to be very, very helpful. And if we work a little bit more with emotions, then we need to see that part of every emotion. It, of course, it also goes for the wholesome states of mind, goes as well for love, generosity, and so on. Yes, for non-violence and so on. This is easier than to see that there is a big part of love and compassion in there. But there's also clinging. Well, there's usually a good part of identifying with it. So also there, we encourage that aspect that is really helpful or that wants to be of help. And we look for more skillful ways of being happy. Basically, that's what Dharma is about. We look for more skillful ways of finding a lasting happiness, a happiness that is not dependent on circumstances, on conditions. So the unskillful part of all of our afflictions, of our emotions that create suffering, is that they're usually too short-sighted. They don't take in account the long-term effects of encouraging desire, of living in pride, of, competitive mind, and so on. They don't see what this does with us. It's like short-sighted seems to give some good result, but already you don't have to be very long vision. You say already in the medium range, you know, within a very easily observable time, you see that it's actually not good for us to be in the spirit of competition, in desire, in aversion, all of that, you know. Pride, I mean, pride feels nice when you're in it, but when you look at yourself and others, oof, you see so quickly that it is not the most pleasing state of mind. Yes? So all of that, actually, we would say are unskillful ways of dealing with the challenges in this world. And they are based on a lack of awareness, a lack of understanding this world, understanding life. And this is what is usually translated as ignorance. But maybe you add the word lacking awareness, because, you know, in Sanskrit it's avidya. And this A does not mean necessarily non-awareness. It's not necessarily a complete negation, but it means lacking. So there can be awareness, but it's not complete. There can be understanding, but it's not going deep enough. So this lack of awareness, it's not that we lack information. It's not that this ignorance can be cured by reading more books. To some extent, the books, the teachings will open our eyes. And actually what they do is they help us to enhance awareness, our sensitivity, this is to say. Awareness is all about this sensitivity, the capacity to finally experience in a very subtle way, to experience just how it is. That is, this is calling on our intuitive capacities. You know, this is what we call awareness. This deep awareness is not a conceptual process. It is intuitively, but very clearly, getting the taste of just how it is. It is tasting is a good way to describe that. It is tasting into the atmosphere. And, you know, like when I asked you to look into the mind, I did that yesterday, but we did it a few times. Then often the texts say that you see the openness, you see the empty nature, you see the impermanence, but actually we feel it, we taste it. If we talk too much about seeing, it's so much connected with the visual sense, and the visual sense actually is very dualistic, the way we normally use it. So here, when I say feeling and tasting, we go to senses, images. These are only images. Huh? These are only images. Pointers to the moon. Yeah. So this the image of tasting openness, you see how what it does with you? It's different than when I see to see the open nature. We taste it, which is impossible. Somehow, by using an impossible verb, yeah, how can you taste openness? How can you taste fluidity? It's like impossible, but because it is impossible, it is like a poem. It is a poetic way of showing what is behind the words. So I will invite you, also in the guided meditations, to taste kind of behind the emotions, yeah? To taste already the compassionate attempt in every emotion, this love, this wish for happiness, to already feel that. We already talked about the fear. I hope you remember. Huh? We had fear as one of our examples. And we went into the fear being actually a very wise and compassionate reaction of the organism to protect us from something that endangers our health, our emotional stability, our friends, and so on. Yeah, so, but we took the example of walking across the bridge. You also remember that? This typical swinging Tibetan bridge with the planks of wood. And we were, you know, and you could feel that fear when you're going to cross a bridge like that is not the most skillful way to take care. You want to reach the other side. You need to cross that bridge. Now, careful attention, wise, relaxed mindfulness with every step, which would mean in our case with every thought, with every movement of the mind. This is so much more helpful than to get blocked in fear. That will make us shiver. That will make us tremble, and we might unnecessarily lose the balance on the bridge. And the bridge is a very nice image, because these bridges which go over the, which cross the canyons, these ravines or ravines, yes, they cross over something which is going deep down with the feeling to maybe get lost and get hurt. Yeah, something really dreadful could happen when I fall into that. Now, this is yet another aspect of emotions. This we also need to first understand, because if we start working head on with emotions, we don't see what they protect us from. All emotions have a function of protecting us from a state of being where we don't know. Where the emotion comes in, actually, it is the dualistic reaction of moving into a situation with desire, with hatred, with fear, with competition, where if we were to let go, we wouldn't quite know how to handle the situation, how to be in that. So let me give you one of the nicer examples, how we fall in love. Okay? There is this openness. There is this very inspiring encounter with someone. And this inspiration is great. Now, this inspiration touches us. It makes us, if we allow it to happen, it makes us very naked, vulnerable. Yeah? You feel that? It's this woo feeling. And it is difficult for us to stay in that open, inspired dimension where we don't really know who we are and who is the other person. It's like, yes. So if you can, you breathe in that, you allow it to be without jumping in. Oh, I want to meet you again. Can we make a date? And so on. And then thinking about the person and thinking about what you will dress when you meet next time and so on. All the activities of falling in love, which is actually this falling in love mechanism, is actually a way of securing us in a relationship that has the potential to destabilize us. And this mechanism which you can see so well in the relationship, this is the same with anger. The anger takes over for the helplessness, for not knowing how to deal with that uncomfortable experience. So to drive it out is like filling the space of that not knowing. Again, this not knowing, every time this not knowing is this lack of awareness. Yeah, the dualistic movement of mind comes in as a safety mechanism to kind of make our world stable in this dualistic functioning with desire and anger and pride and competition, you know, jealousy, with the hopes and the fears. Then we have our world. Yeah, it's like the relationships are clear. If we were to relax those movements, the world doesn't look so clear anymore. We would not be able to hold on to such clear opinions. We would feel more, and various ways of looking at the situation would be possible. We could even look at it from the point of view of the other person or of many other. This would be a new flexibility which makes us enter something which you could call a groundlessness. Yeah, groundless feeling. And this is where the bridge comes in. Yeah, this steep canyon going deep below is like a nice way of talking about groundlessness. So actually working with emotions with this understanding will have two very different tastes to it. That is a taste of knowing this emotional reaction to be an act of compassion, of searching for happiness. And there is an understanding that it is covering up a fear of the groundless experience. Yes. Now this groundless experience, this is akin to the non-dual experience. Yeah. So what we talk, what we say is the experience of awakening is actually centerless mind, groundless, open, no self-center, just flowing and somehow uncomfortable to our normal functioning. It is exactly that what we face when we really talk about the fear of going beyond at the time of leaving this body. It is going into that groundlessness, not structured, not knowing what will wait. And actually, we are going into it every moment of our experience. The now, and I have led you a little bit into an experience of the now already, without talking too much about it, where you feel that the now, when we are not anticipating the future and not holding on to the past and not make the present into something, then the now, yes, it is this groundless experience. It is this this not being somebody solid in a situation that is also not solid, where everything is dynamic, opening up to this full, spacious, dynamic mind. And that's exactly the practice of awareness. So you could say that it takes courage. But I also tell you, it just takes the same compassion that you normally put into your emotions. If we are really compassionate with ourselves, then we look for better solutions. We look for better solutions than always structuring that reality with our dualistic thinking, with me and the other, clinging, aversion, comparing. Yes. Whew. Life can be so much easier, and it will be an act of love to ourselves, of self-care, to find better solutions. So when we talk about the afflictions, you know, in the old tradition, in all Buddhist traditions, they're called Mara. Mara means, we can translate very heavy terms for that. But actually, these are just the obstacles to awakening. The Klesha Mara, the Skanda Mara, and so on. We can continue. But these four Maras, they're actually unskillful ways of trying to be happy. That's all. And it's just lacking the awareness that open, fluid being in resonance is not dangerous. Yes. So the end of ignorance is also the end of fear. This is what you need to know. Maybe you sometimes wonder why ignorance, this lack of awareness, is classified as an emotion. And why in the Abhidhamma, when you look at the Buddhist teaching, the Abhidhamma, you don't find fear. Although it is everywhere. Everywhere. Every emotion is connected to fear. And actually, in this lotus, which we put out, where it says in the center, lack of awareness, ignorance, you could put fear there. Because that is the taste of not knowing. All emotions that we will deal with, all these dualistic movements of mind, they have an underlying fear. An underlying fear of the unstructured nature of being. Of that centerless awareness. And this is the underlying, again, this feeling, you know, the observing capacity of our mind says, I don't know this. What's happening there? If I let go more, will I go crazy? If I let go more, will my emotions overwhelm me? What will happen if I let go of control? This is the underlying anxiety of fear. And this is identical with the so-called ignorance, the center of the mandala, you know, the center of the samsaric way of being in the world. This lotus is a mandala. Huh? This is like a center with its circumference, from the center, then all the activities of the dualistic mind, they sprout, huh? They come about. And the other mandala, the other lotus, which is on the notice board, this is the mandala of timeless awareness. It's the awakened mandala. Yeah? This is from awareness, from full awareness, Dhammadhatu awareness, the realm of phenomena. From this awareness, then show not only the spacious aspect, but the unhindered aspect, the quality, the very finely differentiating aspect, and the all-perfecting, the creative aspect of mind. They're all just coming naturally from that awareness. Okay, some of you were nodding as I was going along with this very subtle explanation of the emotions. Now, I think it's good if we meditate a little bit, huh? Just let that sink in. You don't have to do anything with this explanation you just received. It works in us. That what we have understood will continue to work. There is no need for conceptually underlining it. Just trust it as you breathe in, as we breathe in, and breathe out. Maybe you notice that there is a deep acceptance of yourself, a deepening acceptance. Because there is an understanding that all these various emotional states actually are just an expression of compassion.